Hello, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey, it's Adrenaline Realm's Thriller Channel. I'm your host, Neil Heligers, and this is False Idols, Episode 14. Enjoy.
Layla was glad to discover that the cafe Rami suggested was far away from the safe house. When she walked in, she scanned the crowd, and her eyes stopped at the gaze of a young man who looked both similar and completely different from the 9-year-old boy in her memory. He smiled.
"Layla,"
he said. They hugged. He was taller than she was, his hair cut short and clean. His face was so familiar, it was like she was looking into a kind of gender-changing mirror. It felt good to hold him. She closed her eyes and squeezed him tight. She let go, and they sat and beamed wordlessly at each other for several seconds. Rami wore a crisp white button-up dress shirt and jeans, with brand-new-looking, green-striped white Adidas high tops. The boy with the big eyes and child's voice, who'd sometimes snuggled beside her at night to escape from nightmares, had grown into a handsome young man. She couldn't help but feel proud, although she knew she'd had nothing to do with it. Layla noticed two young women seated at a table nearby, casting furtive glances at him and whispering to each other. They could wait, she thought, as she touched his face possessively. "You're okay," she whispered, relieved to see that he was all in one piece.
Yeah, everything's okay. And everything's gonna be okay. I'm sorry you had to be here now when this is happening. I'm sorry you got worried."
"Don't apologize." She paused. She wanted to know more, but she was worried she might come across as too heavy-handed. "Rami, what were you doing at this protest?" He smiled.
"Fighting the good fight."
She was struck again by his charisma. She blinked. He could see that she didn't understand.
"It was a protest against all these government people on campus. The government's given the police the power to come on campus and harass us without warrants. They're constantly watching us, putting pressure on us, arresting us, harassing the faculty, keeping an eye on everything so they can control the campus. They're criminals. They're thieves stealing the future of our country. They're trying to stop the young people's support for Farid Mansour. He wants the same Egypt as we do, a modern Egypt. It's our duty to support him."
If he hadn't been so passionate and so eloquent, if his words hadn't sounded so earnest and his insights so hard-won, she might have wondered if he was parroting someone else. This was her brother. He wasn't taking the insults of the world sitting down. Layla smiled. She couldn't help herself. He squinted, wary, as if he suspected she might be making fun of him or humoring him.
It's not a funny situation, he murmured.
She set her hand on his.
I'm not laughing. I was just thinking that it sounds like they should be the ones afraid of you.
He nodded. Pride glimmered on his face.
Damn straight, he said with a grin.
They burst out laughing, loud enough that the people at the other tables turned to look at them.
So, who was at the protest? Asked Layla.
Mostly students. It wasn't even that big a crowd.
But your friends from school?
She was fishing for clues about his life, the context in which he lived.
Yeah, a couple of my friends were there.
My friend Abdel got hit in the head with a flying bottle. He got 10 stitches right here.
He pointed to the side of his head above his right ear.
200 students at most. We were just walking, protesting peacefully, and those fucking thugs...
He stopped.
Sorry about that.
She shrugged.
I'm just glad you're okay,
she said, frowning with concern.
It's all good. I got kicked, but I'm fine.
His eyes glowed with tenderness, and Layla understood that her little brother was a man now. He was trying to reassure her, and it had worked.
Hey, sister?
He took her hand and held it between his two strong hands. There was something almost paternal about it, although she could not remember their father touching her so gently.
I don't want to talk about me. There's really not much to say. You know it all. I'm here in Cairo, going to school, busting heads.
He laughed.
It's home. It's the world we know. What about you in the big wide world out there? What are you doing? What is your life like?
She sat back. How could she tell him about her life without revealing the truth of her presence in Cairo? She had to tread carefully.
It's hard to describe. It's just busy, really busy all the time, and it's also really dull. I work in the comptroller's office for a division of the State Department. We're doing an audit at the embassy here. Just a couple weeks. It's not that interesting, but it's a job.
She told him more. All the details were pieced together from plausible, perfect little lies that concealed her completely.
Mama would be so proud, said Rami.
The mention of her mother made her stiffen.
Rami, you don't have to say that.
His eyes widened in mortification.
Hey, I didn't mean to upset you.
She wondered what her face looked like that he should look so concerned. But she also felt a sudden burst of emotion. Love and a sense of loss for the little boy who had somehow magically turned into the gentle man seated across the table from her. She had no desire or patience to talk about her mother, with whom she hadn't spoken in years, or her father, who had died years ago. She was surprised and embarrassed when she felt her eyes watering. Rami leaned forward and peered closer into her eyes.
It's true,
he whispered as he squeezed her fist.
She'd be proud of you.
They sat in silence for a little while, almost in a mutual meditation. Layla wiped her eyes with a napkin.
Listen, said Rami. Don't get angry. I just...
He sat back, sighed, and rubbed his face with his palms.
What is it, Rami? I know it's been a long time. Way too long. But I know she'd love to see you.
The idea of it jolted her. She had no intention of seeing her mother. At some point, years before, she didn't know when exactly, her antipathy toward her mother had calcified into a hard, protective shell of denial.
Why? I didn't even come to Baba's funeral.
She felt tears prick her eyes again, despite herself.
Layla, that's the past. You're here now, We can be like a real family again. Mama and Sana would love to see you. Come. Come with me and we can go see Sana at least. I just don't see how. I'm leaving in a few days.
She shook her head. She had run out of excuses. What he offered sounded so tempting. Could it really be so easy?
I'll make it happen, said Rami.
He leaned forward, intent. She could see how earnestly he was trying to sell the idea.
And I'll make it easy for you, for both of you. I'll be like Jimmy Carter when he got Sadat and Begin to shake hands.
He brought his hands together in a mime of the former president, bringing the two heads of state together in peace. Layla burst out laughing.
You're crazy, she said.
He turned serious.
I'm not crazy, Layla. I'm just sad. And I've been sad for half my life. We haven't been a family, really, since I was a kid.
He paused and peered at the steaming coffee and the bowl of ice cream on the table in front of him.
I don't want you to think I don't remember. I do. What Baba said, the things he said, trying to keep you from doing what you wanted to do.
He looked up at her again.
And I can understand that you're angry with Mama. She didn't defend you.
Layla nodded. She hung on to every word he said. The only other people who knew the truth of what had happened were their mother and Sana. Rami saying it out loud made her feel for the first time in 11 years that she really did have a family. A family that knew everything, the good and the bad. The way James must feel about his father. Now the tears flowed freely down her cheeks.
But can't we forgive one another?
He continued.
Can't we learn to trust one another again? You and me and Mama and Zana are the only family we've got.
She took the napkin from the table, wiped her tears away, and nodded.
Okay, she said. But you've got to help me out if things get too... weird.
She nodded. He smiled.
Okay. I promise.
Hello, friend. This is Neil Heligers, host of Adrenaline Realms Thriller Channel, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit more about the Greenlight app. And this message is, of course, sponsored by Greenlight, but our family was using the Greenlight app even before the first ad in a wonderful, thrilling cosmic coincidence, right? See what I did there? So again, to catch you up, Greenlight is a debit card and a money app that's made for families. Basically, the way it works is that parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving. And you can see exactly how much money they have in their account, and there's different ways to give them money. What we've been doing is a weekly allowance, a certain amount that goes into his account every week. So in order to further the conversation about money and about earning, we're using Greenlight as a kind of a foundation for that conversation. In other words, instead of just the allowance he gets for certain base things that he's expected to do around the house, we are also adding the chore feature, which is certain one-time payments for certain one-time jobs. For example, in our house, we're trying to encourage our son to start walking the dog more. He's old enough for it, he's responsible enough for it, and he's done it enough that he knows what to do. So he can really see that for all those extra times that he steps up and does the dog walk, he gets rewarded for that job well done. And this is the conversation. In life, when you work a little extra harder, you get a little extra compensation, and you can either save that up or spend it how you like. And we're not alone in this. Millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's a very easy and very convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and for families to navigate life together. So sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/adrenaline. That's greenlight.com/adrenaline to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/adrenaline... So thrilling, right?
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Layla woke from a nap as dusk fell and lay in bed gazing at the pinkish light above the city. Her stomach churned and she sighed. Other than the glimmer of real joy she felt at having seen Rami, her thoughts were clouded by guilt and doubt. It paralyzed her. She'd done very little that day, other than pad around the apartment, dwelling on the mess she'd made of things. She'd tipped off Bennett about the sting. She'd made contact with her brother when she'd been expressly told not to. She'd fallen for James. She had almost no contact with Pierce. Would they be making more progress if she hadn't found Pierce in the safe house bathroom? She knew she shouldn't feel guilty about it, but she did. When evening came, she dressed in a black, high-waist, sleeveless jumpsuit and took a cab to a gallery opening at a place called Khamsin. Bennett had asked her to go. Bennett was still in Montreal, and James was still in London. So she went as a representative with some of the gallery's cards in her purse. Most of the crowd she'd gotten to know during the winter was out of town. The opening was a celebration of a long-standing collaboration between a notable Scotland-based dealer and local investors and art enthusiasts. Contemporary art hung on the walls of the gallery. Some of the themes depicted were overtly political. There was a series titled Tahrir that depicted the rise of the Arab Spring in Cairo in the form of transformative shapes, the circles, ovals, and other configurations that formed moments of human solidarity since the unrest had begun. She was surprised, while scanning the trajectory of a tray full of delicious lamb skewers, to find one of her most elusive targets looking at her. Kiyoshi Tanaka stood only feet away, gazing over the shoulder of the man with whom he was talking. She smiled, as seductively as she could, and turned away. His gaze telegraphed that he was the type of man who was used to getting what he wanted. She quickly decided to ignore him, hoping to lure him to her that way. She mingled and made small talk with other guests, but quickly concluded that none were on the evidence board, or fit the profile of big-ticket collectors whose money would be funding the Mukharib. Tanaka was the only target. She felt anxious to reel him in. Losing this opportunity would be disastrous. The investigation was in shambles. She had nothing left to lose, and so she presented herself as bait. She distanced herself from the rest of the guests and was standing alone, studying an 18th-century painting of the Nile, when Kiyoshi Tanaka strode up and stood beside her.
"It's a beautiful event, is it not?"
His voice sounded like sandpaper, tough and decisive. "It is," she said in Japanese. His eyes lit up.
"You speak Japanese?"
She continued in Japanese.
"I speak it okay. Not so well."
"You speak it well."
He crossed his arms. His suit was sharp and he was tall and very intense. He had the face of an actor, expressive, almost mournful. but his eyes were charming. Layla got a strong sense of where Hiro got his charisma from. She also wondered if the father was the source of the son's wayward moral compass. "Are you a buyer?" she asked. "Or are you involved in some other way? I would not take you for an artist."
"Oh, you might be surprised."
He smiled. "So you're an artist?"
"No, you were correct. I'm a buyer. Or I should say, I'm a potential buyer. But I do not think I will be buying anything this evening."
He was charming, coy, and very self-contained. Layla felt a bit out of her depth in a way she hadn't with Bennett or Noor. This man operated on a different level.
"What kinds of things do you buy?" she asked.
"I love ancient art and artifacts. I have a great collection at my home in Crete. My most valued Middle Eastern possessions are there."
"Crete?"
"Yes, in the western section. Jania."
"What an unusual place for a home," she said.
"You've been?"
He sipped at his glass of red wine.
"No, I've always meant to go. My friends tell me it's charming. I've always been captivated by the myth of the Minotaur."
"Ah,"
he said, shaking his head gently.
"The myth originates from a different part of the island. The palace of Knossos, where the labyrinth is supposed to have been, is in Heraklion, not Shania."
"That's fascinating," she said.
He smiled.
"In any case, a beautiful young woman might want to think twice before going anywhere near the labyrinth."
They both laughed.
"But seriously,"
he continued,
"it is a beautiful place, like a work of art in and of itself."
"And what kinds of things do you keep there?"
She was wary of being too obvious, but she was also anxious not to lose this opportunity. The questions seemed appropriate in the context of the event. She needed to find out what she could before he vanished again. Tanaka smiled.
"Some of the rarest and most beautiful ancient artifacts known to man."
He said it with conviction and naked pride. His eyes betrayed a desire to seduce her with his power and wealth.
"Oh my goodness, that's fascinating."
She smiled. She realized that although she could mention Hiro, it might be best to play this out in a different way. Tanaka gazed at her as if he hoped to make her part of his collection. It was intimidating, but if it gave her an opportunity to find out more about his collection, she would use whatever tools were at her disposal. Tanaka took a long drink of his champagne.
"You shouldn't have to wait too long to see Crete, or to see my collection. You can come with me. It would be my honor to have you as a guest."
She smiled demurely and set her palm for a seductive second against his chest.
"You're too kind," she said.
His moss-green tie felt like the softest silk.
"I might take you up on that sometime."
He raised an eyebrow and took another sip from his drink.
"I was going to go to Paris tonight to see a friend, but I can wait. My private jet is at the airport. I could show you my collection in Crete and ensure that you get back to Cairo, or wherever you want to go next, safely."
Layla's mind raced. Tanaka's motives had been obvious from first sight. She'd played the bait and he was biting the hook. Now he was offering her an exclusive tour of his art collection. This was her chance. With the trip to Lake Como, she'd blown a good percentage of her travel budget and had come up empty-handed. Then Pierce had proven to be compromised. In New York, in an impulsive moment, Layla herself had compromised the mission. No, she thought, with a gut-wrenching stab of guilt. She'd sabotaged the mission. And she'd done it not to advance the investigation, but to further compromise it because of her feelings for the son of one of the prime suspects. she couldn't claim the moral high ground over peers. She had done her own damage to their cause. But here was an opportunity to set things right and get the investigation back on its feet. She took a sip from her glass to buy herself another second. She might not get a chance like this again, and it was easy. All she had to do was pretend to be a little flighty, a little tipsy, a little more bubbly than she actually was. She gazed up at him and stepped close enough that he might feel her warm breath. She reached for his tie, stroked the edge of the silk.
How can I travel with you to Crete if I don't even know your name?
He smiled.
Ah, he said.
Tanaka's driver took them to the airport. Almost as soon as they climbed into the back of the big black Mercedes, Tanaka set his hand on her bare knee.
Mr. Tanaka,
Layla said with a smile, as she firmly but gently removed his hand and set it on his own knee.
A man of your position. I assume there's a Mrs. Tanaka somewhere.
That seemed to break his steely self-confidence, but only for a second. He chuckled, but he said nothing. The driver drove fast and efficiently to the airport. The plush black seats smelled of fresh leather. Tanaka described some of the objects she would see. A stela, a pharaoh's flail and crook, a bust of Amenhotep III. The driver turned into a service driveway at the airport, drove past dimly lit terminals along lanes meant for airport vehicles. He stopped at the edge of a quiet stretch of tarmac, quiet so late in the evening. There, gleaming cream-colored with a swoosh of crimson, sat a sleek-looking Gulfstream jet. Tanaka, in his courtly fashion, waved her up the stairs before him. She didn't have the words to describe the luxuriously appointed jet. A young Japanese man greeted them, and when they were seated comfortably, he served them flutes of champagne. The engines roared to life. The jet hummed. Tanaka reached across with his glass upheld to raise a toast.
To adventure,
he said, rather intensely. Layla raised an eyebrow, smiled, and clinked her glass against his. To Crete.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI Advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawned something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Heligers. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.